Hello and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. As part of KVNF's midterm election coverage, we are featuring portions of the Club 20 debates. Today, we'll hear part two of a debate between 3rd Congressional District candidates Diane Mitch Bush and Scott Tipton. The 3rd Congressional District covers most of western Colorado, including the counties of Delta, Garfield, Gunnison, Hinsdale, Mesa, Montrose, Ouray, Pitkin, San Juan, and San Miguel counties. We'll begin today's debate with a question for the candidates about Jordan Cove.
Jordan Cove LNG is a proposed state-of-the-art liquefied natural gas terminal and storage facility to be located within the international port of Coos Bay, Oregon. A recent U.S. Geological Service assessment discovered that the Mancos Shale in the Piance Basin of Colorado contains an estimated average of 66 trillion cubic feet of shale natural gas, 74 million barrels of shale oil, and 45 million barrels of natural gas liquids. If approved, the Jordan Cove LNG pipeline would intersect with western Colorado and provide a means to export LNG, which would reinvigorate our energy industry. Do you support the Jordan Cove LNG terminal, pipeline, and storage facility? Why or why not?
I most certainly do. We've advocated for Jordan Cove from the beginning. When we're talking about international markets, when the Obama administration refused to be able to advance Jordan Cove, they said there wasn't a market. I came out of the private sector. It's pretty tough to sell something when you don't have the product. You've got to be able to deliver it. Well, a company was able to go over and actually establish the market in Japan. We have orders right now to be able to take a good portion of the pipeline to be able to deliver that and to responsibly develop that resource here. You know, I've gone out and actually visited with the folks who work in the oil and gas industry. People with dirt underneath their fingernails. They live here, they work here, they want to make sure it's done right. Why would we not want to grasp that opportunity when the USGS points out that we have potentially the second largest reserve in the country right here? Let's put Americans to work. Let's start creating American energy security. Let's employ our people. To me, that is good common sense. When we're looking at the international markets, one thing we worry about are boom and bust cycles. That will help level out, simply be out of demand, to be able to make sure that we're maintaining not only some stability in prices, but we're creating jobs here for our people, for our families. I think we all need to be embracing that.
Diane, you will have 1.5 minutes to respond.
Manco Shale Formation, indeed all the formations in the Piance, are the future of gas. The question is there a market? Japan has done a deal with Russia for pipelines and for offshore exploration. China, the other big importer of our Colorado gas, or we hope it would be, has done a deal with Russia. We are not sure what the markets actually will be for our Colorado gas. Those jobs depend on having those markets. So until someone shows me the data, and I've looked really hard, it's still not clear to me with these deals with Russia between Japan and China that we will have a steady, certain, predictable market. The gas market is notoriously volatile, and quite right, if we had long-term contracts, it wouldn't be as volatile, for sure. I'm not at all sure we're going to have those. And also remember, it's not Jordan Cove we're really looking at here. Yes, it is, but that's in Oregon. Those jobs are in Oregon. The pipeline, the Pacific Connector pipeline, which goes to Malin, Oregon, which is where our western pipeline that already exists has its terminus, that's the key. Guess what? It goes over agricultural lands in Oregon. What about eminent domain there? I want questions answered. Right now, I haven't taken a position.
Thank you. Scott, you have 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Pretty easy to take a position. You're for it or you're against it. Why would you be against jobs? Right here, to be able to create them right here. You know, I think when we look at a real difference probably between us is we've got someone who's saying that I don't want to support it, and I'll figure out a way to maybe try and stop it. She may have missed. I just cited that we have orders for natural gas right now to be able to deliver it. Contracts are in place. The demand is there. And I'll always submit. Nobody will outdo America when it comes to competition.
Thank you. Our sixth and final panel question will come from Mike Murphy and be directed to Diane first.
Thank you, Cindy. In the past, we've seen attempts by the federal government to control Colorado water by attempting to maneuver around Colorado water law. How will you protect Colorado from any future attempts from the federal government and its agencies from this intrusion into our water rights? As we continue to experience a very dry year, what steps do you feel are necessary and appropriate to assure that current and future water needs are met?
At the state level in 2013 and 2015, and finally with success in 2016, I co-sponsored a bill with a Republican you may know, Jerry Sonnenberg, that stated clearly that our prior appropriation, our Colorado water law, which is in our 1876 Constitution, was not to be overridden by the federal government. He sponsored something very similar in the U.S. House. What's important to bear in mind here is that folks in Washington do not, I served on the Interim Water Committee for 5 years, I served as the vice chair of the Ag Committee, which is where the water bills go. I know for a fact that the folks in Washington do not understand prior appropriation. And they don't understand drought. And they don't understand so many of the issues that we here in Colorado deal with every single day. So I think it's critical to have a representative who has worked in the state on water and water policy and water law, and who has worked across the aisle with my Republican colleagues on this issue, who really understands Colorado law. We can't have the federal government dictating what we have in our Constitution. We need to also make sure, and it's not a federal thing, and I'll tell you later what it is.
Thank you. Scott, you have 1.5 minutes to respond.
You know, I appreciate my opponent following the lead that I established in Congress to be able to protect Colorado water. Our priority-based systems. I hope she'll join with me also in opposing WOTUS, the waters of the U.S., to make sure that we're protecting all Coloradoans, all Westerners when it comes to water. We've got a real challenge in terms of seeing the federal government continuing to try and reach out to be able to capture water rights. The Forest Service, the bill that we had directed out of Washington, to be able to make sure that as a conditional use of permit, that our ski areas weren't having to sign their water rights over to the federal government with no compensation. Called the taking, it's just called theft. They were impacting also our ranching community. What right to be able to divert water out of a stream? No, you weren't going to do that unless you were willing to sign your water rights over to the federal government to be able to get that permit renewed. We've got priority-based here in Colorado. We have state law that the federal government has always respected. And third, in Colorado and in the West, water is a private property right. We're committed to making sure we're standing up for that, and we will not allow the federal government to step into Colorado water law.
Thank you.
Actually, the use of water is a private property right. According to the Colorado Constitution, we the people own the water. Water rights are for the use of that water in a specific time, a specific place, and for a specific reason. That's what a water right is. It's for a specific beneficial use. I think it's really important that now in Colorado We have recreational and channel diversion rights, RISDs, which allow communities to, we'll talk later about that.
Thank you. Thank you, candidates. Thank you, panelists, for your questions. We will now move into the cross-examination portion of this debate. Each candidate will be given 5 minutes to answer questions of their opponent on matters pertinent to the race or the office. Please keep in mind that the examining candidate controls the time and may interrupt their opponent's answers or amend their question if they feel their opponent is confused about the question, is avoiding the question, or is presenting a monologue rather than answering the question. The examining candidate should use this time to ask questions and not present a monologue, and they should allow a reasonable opportunity for their opponent to directly answer those questions. This moderator will not interfere during each 5-minute cross-exam unless the examining candidate is presenting a monologue rather than asking questions of their opponent, or if the candidates are being disrespectful toward one another. Candidate Scott Tipton will begin the cross-examination.
Thank you, Cindy. And Ms. Mitch-Bush, Diane, one of the most important votes to cast is probably the first vote in Washington. It's for leadership. You only have one person that has showed an intention of running to be Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Are you going to support her?
I'm going to support the candidate who is the best for our district. We need new leadership. I will not necessarily support Nancy Pelosi. But you know what? You guys are using this issue to cast our attention away from the bills that you have passed.
You know, last month, we had a vote in the House of Representatives, and it was on whether or not we support the people that are trying to be able to protect our borders. We have threats, as you probably know, terrorism, gangs, and also of drugs coming across the border. Do you support ICE? How would you have voted on that bill?
I believe ICE needs to be reformed, not done away with. We need border security, but we need to be a little more evidence-based. If Marco Rubio and Michael Bennett could come together for comprehensive immigration reform, bipartisan, in 2013, let's do that.
Now, when it comes to sanctuary cities, we have some in the 3rd District. Do you support them?
It is the right of cities and towns to decide what happens within their boundaries, not the federal government.
Let's follow that up just a little bit. What if a city or a town decides not to pay federal taxes?
That's a different kind of decision. You're talking about whether a city, town, or county.
So you don't respect federal law when it comes to that?
It's not that I don't respect federal law. It's that many of our local law enforcement officials that I know do not want to be ICE enforcers. They want to essentially enforce the law in their communities.
So you're going to support sanctuary cities? Just want to be clear.
I don't think that is up to the Congress. I think that's up to those cities.
But you support sanctuary cities. So
I don't support them. I don't not.
And I'd like to give you one more chance. Jordan Cove, can you support it? There are contracts in place. Do you support it?
If those questions are answered, if we have Colorado jobs,
there's a contract,
not Oregon jobs, that contract is not long-term, and Japan has a contract with Russia.
Can you excuse me just 1 second? You may have missed what was in the question. USGS notes that we have the second largest reserve.
We
have the pipelines to be able to get it out of here. Will you support Jordan Cove and an opportunity to be able to create those jobs
if
here?
If we have the markets that create jobs here and create demand for Colorado gas.
Where do you think it's going to be produced if the oil, if the gas is here? Wouldn't that create jobs?
If it can go somewhere, if it can be sold.
So there are contracts in place. Will you support it?
Those are not long-term contracts. It's the usual boom and bust.
I understand why you don't probably want to maybe answer that
question. If you give me the information.
Why don't we move on to health care? You've liked to talk a lot about that. How are you going to pay for your big government-run health care?
I don't have big government-run health care.
You're asking for single payer.
Please, you ask me a question, let me answer it. Mm-hmm. Those are the rules. Mm-hmm. The Affordable Care Act needs to be protected because of pre-existing conditions. The bill package that you're talking about with these so-called
No, you're talking about my time. You're talking about implementing a single payer system. That's not the Affordable Care Act. Single payer, $32 trillion projected cost. How are you going
that
to pay
That is an
for
old
it?
Projected cost, which relies on some really
yeah,
bad data.
Yeah, it's probably
data.
Gone up. Probably gone
no,
up.
No, it hasn't so. Gone up because that cost didn't take into account the administrative cost of the current system. We are the only industrialized country that pays over 33% for administration.
How much
of
are you
healthcare.
Raising taxes to pay for it? What's the number? What's the cost?
I do not know what that number is.
So you're promoting something that you don't know how
I'm
much it's going to cost.
I'm not proposing it. It already exists.
Yeah.
John Conyers' bill, H.R. 676, talks about it. Your CBO is not allowed to give a number because you know why? It's dead in committee.
Thank you, candidates. Now, candidate Diane Mitch Bush will have 5 minutes to question Scott Tipton.
For a long time previously, you did not support the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Now, in election year, you say you do. But you're not listed as a co-sponsor on H.R. 502, which is the actual bill that came out of your committee. It didn't come out of your committee, I wish it had, to actually give funding for this. Mike Kaufman is listed as a co-sponsor. Why aren't you?
First, you're wrong. We've always supported the Land Water Conservation Fund. We think that we need to have some reforms on it. But if it's just going to be stopped, we've said we will vote for that to be able to pass. You may remember...
That is not what the quotes in the past say that you said.
Well, before you quit the state legislature midterm, you may well remember you still get to be able to vote on the bill. That's what counts. Not just strictly the co-sponsorship on it. We've always supported the Land Water
Why
Conservation
isn't
Fund.
Your name on it? Mike Kaufman's is and other Republicans are. Why?
We haven't had the form sent over. Happy to go ahead and sign on as a co-sponsor.
Oh, great. So. Let's go to the next question. The VA currently and for a while has had the ability to negotiate drug prices. Mm-hmm. Their costs for their patients are less than a third of what Medicare's are. Would you favor allowing Medicare to negotiate for drug prices?
You're talking about Part D?
I am talking about the ability of Medicare to negotiate.
So that's under
that's
Part D.
In Part D.
That's in Part
but
D.
But right now they're not allowed to.
You don't understand how the negotiations work. They're actually
conducted. I do understand
no,
how they work.
Apparently you don't. Because they're actually conducted by four and non-profit insurance companies who negotiate with
insurance
the pharmaceutical
companies
always for the
negotiate
right to be able to
with
deliver.
The pharmaceuticals for prices, whether it's for
it
everybody.
It is not Medicare, which is what you are citing, who is doing the negotiation. These are private companies.
But someone
that
representing
are doing
Medicare, not pharma and not insurance. Let's go on to the next question. You voted against a bill which would have allowed VA doctors at the Veterans Administration, to prescribe cannabis for PTSD. Study after study has shown that veterans benefit from using marijuana, cannabis, for PTSD. Why did you vote no?
Until we had the studies that are going to be in place and working with the VA, they're actually prohibited from being able to use this because it's a Schedule I drug.
Yes, and would you change it? Would you change that?
You know, once we get all of the studies in, we're just now learning.
Scott, no, we've had studies
no, no,
for
no,
you, 30
you've asked
years.
Me, you just
30
asked me a question,
years.
And I'll remind you. I get to answer it.
Yes, but we've had studies
so
for 30 years.
So here's the challenge that we really face. We're now getting studies that are coming out showing the impact on young people that are using it. So we need to make sure we do not, in the state of Colorado, we do not have limitations in terms of the THC levels that are in place. that we need to be addressing.
Actually,
in terms
Scott,
of doing
you
that.
Need to look at that a little more closely. I worked very hard on some of those. So would you or would you not allow doctors at the VA to prescribe cannabis?
You know, I think personally, I think there's probably some circumstances that can work for that to actually be something people in pain with cancer and that to be able to address it.
But they aren't allowed to. It's a Schedule I substance.
Yep.
As you know, the administration, as we talked about before, has cut the number of 2A and 2B visas. What are you doing right now to help our businesses get those visas?
You know, we'd actually sat down with Kirsten Nielsen to be able to speak with her, and as I'd noted earlier in our conversation here, they did up some of the H-2B. Here's the big problem. We are not seeing the response coming in for the ag visas to be able to come in. We need to get the renewing visas that are going to be in place. We're working with Chairman Conaway in terms of some of the farm bill, which is currently in conference, to be able to address some of those
Good.
Concerns.
Speaking
for
of the farm bill, let's move along. The House farm bill is very different from the Senate farm bill. A number of ranchers and farmers that I know, as well as a number of agricultural organizations, were very concerned with the House bill. The Senate bill improves on some things. Would you, if you were in conference,
What was the concern?
The concern had to do with CRP. The concerns had to do with what the Trump budget has done to training programs and small businesses.
CRP was actually included.
In the Senate bill, but you didn't include enough in the House bill. And that's what's absolutely critical. You guys say you support ag. Why didn't you step up when Trump's FY18 and FY19 budget cut rural development loans, it cut CRP, it cut training
Thank you,
for
ranchers. Candidates.
Why weren't you there? Why weren't you there?
I'd be happy to respond to that. So.
Okay.
Thank you both for that lively exchange. Each candidate will now have 3 minutes to present their closing remarks. We will begin with candidate Scott Tipton.
Well, again, I thank all of you for taking the time. Appreciate our panelists here to be with us this evening. I think we do have a real choice in this election. Just visiting just a moment ago, my opponent is proposing single-payer health care. She doesn't know what the cost is going to be, won't tell you how much the taxes are going to go up. I think that's important to know. We're going to be standing up for your choice to make sure that you can pick a program which is going to work for you, for your family, to be able to address the long-term costs in terms of families when it looks at the punitive costs in terms of the high deductibles which we have under the current Affordable Care Act, to make sure that we're having a system that will literally work for us. We're going to advocate for our jobs, to make sure that we're standing up for a responsible development of our resources here in the 3rd Congressional District, literally calling for all of the above, standing up for our water, standing up for our farm and ranch community to make sure that they have what they need to be able to grow the crops and then to be able to sell those crops as well, to make sure that we're standing up for the opioid crisis, which my opponent hasn't addressed. Huge problem for so many in the 3rd District that we need to be able to address. We just appropriated $7 billion to be able to get it back to our communities, to make sure, with mental health dollars as well, to be able to make sure that we are trying to solve the problem, something that cannot be completely done by the federal government, but a collaborative effort that's going to have to take place between not only what the federal government can do, but our states, our communities, and our families as well. We're going to continue to stand for our veterans, to be able to give them choice, which she wants to deny in terms of her single-payer health care, to make sure that they can actually get a doctor in their local community to be able to address their physical needs when they have that challenge, and to make sure that we're continuing on those personal levels as well, to make sure that we're filling out the real needs for each individual veteran as they're having different challenges that they face in their communities. You know, we've got a very clear choice in terms of somebody that wants to be able to grow government, to be able to raise taxes, and something that we simply cannot afford. This is where I would ask for your vote and your support. I grew up in the 3rd Congressional District. The values that we express and that we stand for are the values that we all live. Making sure that we have an opportunity for our children to be able to live that something that many of us believed was an American birthright, the American dream. That comes with opportunity, not more government, not more taxes, but freeing up people to be able to create their own vision for the future. That's what we're going to continue to fight for. God bless you, and thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you. Diane Mitch Bush, you will now have 3 minutes for your closing remarks, and you will have the last word.
Thank you all so much for being here, and as always, a big thank you to Club 20. You know, talk is cheap in elections, and we have a crisis in Congress on many levels. One of those levels is that the U.S. Congress has abdicated its responsibility to be a check and balance for this administration. I will not abdicate that responsibility. This Congress is so well known for bickering, partisan sniping, and personal attacks. We see a little bit of that tonight. I don't do that in the legislature. My MO is working with everyone, is listening to everyone. And my MO is especially reading the bills, knowing what's in them, and knowing how that affects the people I work for. I don't work for big lobbyists. I don't work for the party or for party leadership. I have always acted in the interests of my constituents. That is what you can count on me to do in the United States Congress. We need a real representative who actually listens to us, who has real town halls. We need a representative who actually answers constituents' questions. We need a representative who does her homework. We need a representative who will defend Medicare, Social Security. We need a representative who will take seriously one of the most important functions of the U.S. Congress, and that is the power to declare war. Not the president, not the NSA, not any other group, but Congress. We have a crisis in cybersecurity in this country. It is a big national security issue, which this Congress has not addressed. It is siloed, and we need to get on it now. But most of all, we need respect and civility in the U.S. Congress. No name-calling, no labeling. You know, I've been labeled tonight, and certainly in a group of emails from his campaign, that I'm a socialist. I am not a socialist. I grew up in Minnesota as a Minnesota DFLer, Democratic Farmer Labor. That's my set of assumptions about what the Democratic Party is. The Democratic Party works for workers, it works for farmers, and I'll work for you.
Thank you. Thank you to our candidates, thank you to our panelists, and thank you to the audience this evening for this wonderful debate. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Club 20 Debates, featuring part two of a debate between the candidates in Colorado's 3rd Congressional District, Republican incumbent Scott Tipton and his Democratic challenger Diane Mitch Bush. Stay tuned to KVNF for more election coverage in the following weeks. And of course, these debates are posted at kvnf.org. Thank you for listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot.